Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. And you can join us. Some open phone time for you. 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Numbers to get in, can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com and find and follow us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, at Hale Varsity. We'll get caught up with Derek Peterson at HaleVarsity.com and magazine, get his take on some Husker hoops. And Nebraska football, big game with Minnesota. Nice feature by Dr. Petey on Scott Frost and his time at Oregon to Nebraska in the newest issue of Hail Varsity Magazine. We're hoping on a Mike Shewhart sighting. We'll see if Shuey can find his way. It is fantastic outside. So if he gives us the bird, and that's footage of him hitting a shot for a birdie, we get it, but we're hoping for Shuey in the latter part of this hour. Brad Edwards in 1 hour, and then the lowdown on the Gophers with Glenn Mason, former head coach of Minnesota, head coach of Kansas, part of the Big Ten Network. We'll talk with Coach Glenn Mason coming up on Hail Varsity Radio. Is this thing cutting out, or is it me?
Yeah, I hear it cutting out a little bit, too. I thought it was my headphones.
No, so did I.
You might have spilled some coffee on the
mic. I haven't spilled anything. That is not water, but it looks like it. So I don't know what's going on. So we'll move forward. We're going to dive into some basketball, then we'll hear from Troy Walters, Nebraska's offensive coordinator, his comments today. So that's on the docket here. But you had Bill Moose speak with the Journal Star and Omaha World Herald on during parts of yesterday. Dan Kindig, good dude, tremendous coach. He abruptly retiring. And you had comments from Moose on that, a statement out from him on that. I want to get into Bill Moose's kind of two cents, and it's worth more than 2 cents. He's your AD, and he's pretty much wanting to see stability and consistency out of the Nebraska basketball program. So Tim Miles, look, expectations, the Fab Four, picked as high as four. Some say three, some say nine. Listen, Nebraska basketball is one of the best 36 teams in college basketball heading into 2018-2019 per Andy Katz. You know what you saw from that nucleus last year, 22-11, 13-5 in the Big Ten. Man, it was hopping. And this is from Bill Moose. I want to see stability and consistency with Nebraska basketball. He referred to the 2014 and 2015 season. I have a habit of referring to the 2014 and 2015 basketball season because you know why? 2013-2014 was so much fun to cover. It was fun to see No Sit Sunday. It was fun to see Selection Sunday. It was so much fun to see the just Haymarket downtown region off the hook for that NCAA tournament game against Baylor. I miss those days. I miss that as a kid going to the golden era during the knee era with some incredible teams that had some NBA talent. And I miss seeing that for Nebraska basketball. They have the best practice facility. They have pound for pound an insanely awesome arena that's packed every night with access to go get a cocktail and then find your way over. You have it all except stacked seasons of wins in the Big Ten and stacked seasons above 500. Okay, you have everything except a history of winning. Okay, and if you're Bill Moose and you just said, let's sit down, let's talk, let's figure things out, you did that in April. Here's how that thing went. And I think Tim Miles even talked to Lee Barfnik about it. I'm going to go in, going to give him a plan, and we'll move forward. And that result was just a year extension. I-Course, the Shermanator, only extended Tim a year. Okay, so you've got two different athletic directors that have extended the guy a year. So they clearly want to prove it. And each year is a prove-it year for Tim Miles. And is that fair? Is that right? Hey, you tell me. You're the Nebraska fan. I know what expectations are. I know what should happen. But what do you believe happens is the thing. Does he hit 20 wins again? Does he contend for a top four spot in the Big Ten again? Does he get to the dance? Because that's what you want. NIT was nice, but you've been let down. You've had some okay starts. You've had some flashes. They had a nice start to the Big Ten season, a win against Indiana and on the road at Maryland a couple years back. You've got elite athletes like Roby. You have a guy that's been here as a freshman in Glenn Watson. Has he gotten better? He's getting asked to do a different role this year. But, I mean, has he gotten better? Has he stayed the same or has he gotten worse? Last year he struggled. He did things to help his team, but he wasn't scoring those 30-point outbursts like you saw as a freshman or a sophomore. You've got Cope and Palmer, which are godsends thanks to the world of transfer connections in college basketball. Bill Moose with To the Journal Star. For whatever reason, success didn't follow next year, and he's talking about 2014-2015. I think Tim learned from it. I want him to succeed. We have to establish ourselves in men's basketball by being consistent. And, oh, they rise up, and then they're back down. So I ask you, is consistency equal relying on the transfer market? You got to find a niche. You find a niche in football, you find a niche in basketball, and there you go.
You can't rely on the transfer market. I've said it since last year. It's a terrible thing to rely on. It can't be consistent.
That's been up, and that's been down, and you hit it out of the park with Walt.
You nailed it, absolutely.
You hit out of the park
with Walt.
Don't
rely on it.
With Pitchford, right? Siobhan was a kid you inherited from Doc, and it rocked, man. It was good. It was so good as you went into the new building, okay? But then you're back down. Now, I don't expect Nebraska to be North Carolina with the NCAA tournament. That's not a mandate. I know facilities are great. Both practice and where you play the games, you're limited with what you can bring into Nebraska because you're not a traditional power. I understand all of that as well. And I know the Big Ten's psycho. I mean, it's such a good league most years, okay? Somebody's going to be sliding into that last dance spot year in and year out. Some years it'll be Nebraska. Some years it was, you know, Northwestern did it. Maryland's usually pretty pound for pound good. Purdue's good. Even Purdue, though, had a year where they were under 500, and they were brutal. It was their kind of rebuild year. You're going to have those, and you're going to have to accept those at Nebraska that okay, you lose your talent. You're going to have years where you're going to have to rebuild, and I don't think it's fair to expect a reload. I just don't, okay, with Nebraska basketball. But your rebuild year can be a year where you're in contention for at least NIT, and then you springboard. Look at what Iowa does, right? And Fran at Iowa, they have some really good players, okay? They do, but they are a team that will take their lumps. But they're a squad that they're going to be in contention or they'll rise back up. They're not going to be flat out horrible, right? Where you lose and go the month of February without a loss. And it's fair to kind of call your shot as the boss, as athletic director, and say 22 wins is kind of what I'd like. Not a mandate, but you did it last year. Do it this year as a favorite versus a surprise. And I don't know that the plan that Tim Miles has is a plan that Bill Moose thinks can work long term. The transfer side of things. You've had it's been a turnstile with guys leaving. That's college basketball. I get that. But who have you brought in, developed, made better, and have you been able to stack winning seasons? You should do more than you have with the talent you've had. even as bad and tough and rumble as the Big Ten is. So it is. I don't know that you're going to blow out a guy if he wins 20 or gets close to the dance and underachieves. But you can sure as hell to go look for a new job. Hey, Tim, go somewhere else. We aren't going to fire you, but we're going to let you go look. You want to get paid, and you want a long-term deal. Have fun. Go look. Good luck, by the way, in the Power Five. But do this, and we'll talk. You put back-to-back years together. Here's the other thing, though. You have talent like this, and then it's gone. Let's talk a year from now with that building, with this facility. What's coming in? Well, you finally started to get some Nebraska kids that are going to come to town. What's your identity? What are you going to do offensively? What are you going to do in the final moments against Kansas when you're up, they drill a three, and it was an out-of-bounds play that wasn't covered? Part of it's execution, but Nebraska doesn't win the coaching battle a lot. They just haven't. They've outplayed people because they've had guys like Pettaway. They've got guys like Palmer. I hope it works out for Nebraska basketball. I think, God, this team's going to be fun to watch. But how does their leader, their head coach, handle the pressure and what's out there? What you can do and your ability to be consistent is in question by your boss. So go show him again. And it's really 3 years of doing that. You should be used to it now if you're Tim Miles. Gary? Gary's on the line. Gary, come on in. Thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, Chris. Is there any reason that we shouldn't expect that they should win 25 games this year?
The only reason that I would say if they fall well short of that is you've got some of your studs get hurt. If there's injury,
right.
Bets are off, brother. If guys get injured, bets are off. Because you and I both know they don't have depth. They've got their four or five dudes, and they've got some guys waiting in the wings that are going to be good. But they are loaded this year.
Well, it sounds like when I was listening to Tim Miles the other day, Tim was saying that Palmer has to continue doing what he's doing and get better at shooting threes. And you know, I don't know what they're doing, but it seems like that at least Miles' expectations of Palmer are kind of there.
Yeah, I mean, he was first-team All-Big Ten guy last year. He was a first-team All-League guy last year. I mean, yeah.
And he should be this year again, mm-hmm. too.
Sure.
Providing he doesn't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the key. If they get hurt, you know what, we're screwed. But otherwise, I'm excited. I'm going down to Kansas City to watch them play, so I'm excited.
Man, it's going to be a good season. They have it. It's all in front of them, Gary. Thanks for calling, bud. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Hey, it's all good for Bill Moose to throw out high expectations. You feel it as well as a Nebraska basketball fan. You do. Is this the Moose? Not that Moose? Right? The guy just said the Moose is on the line?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Is this the Moose, not that Moose?
Depends what you clarify as the Moose.
Well, the Moose is the one we're talking about. That Moose is a dear listener. Let's go to Moose.
Could be both.
On line one. Moose, how are you?
Schmitty, good afternoon.
How are you?
I should be on the golf course, but I'm just between jobs, so that's the way it is.
It is, man. Shuey's on the golf course, smiling.
I know he is, and I wish I'll live vicariously through him because, you know, we got to do that second job to pay that Lincoln Lutheran tuition, but that's the way it is.
It'll leave that one alone, brother.
but C-Dog and myself, that's my son, we are extremely excited for our season tickets this year, and as we are every year, but even more so this year. I think I'm calling 23 or 24 wins, and I'm calling for the first ever victory in the Big Dance, and that does not count a play-in game.
That's fine.
That's
with
not
me.
Happening.
Yeah, this team needs to be beyond the play-in option.
Agreed.
Moose, thanks. Enjoy your season tickets, man. That'll be good. We'll talk some more hoops with Dr. Petey. Derek Peterson does a great job writing and covering Nebraska basketball along with Jacob Padilla. What's your take here, Danny, the pride of Chicago? I mean, that's where Nebraska originally kind of hung their hat with recruiting. Watson's an Illinois kid.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want this year?
I mean, Moose said it. There has to be a win in the Big Dance.
There's going to be some consistency.
That's it.
He's not mandating a 22 is kind of what you did last year. Follow it up as a favorite. You're loaded. This team's got chemistry. The egos have been checked. Go do it.
Barring any injuries, there's no excuse this team shouldn't make the tournament. Like, if you don't make the tournament, then this season is a failure. There's no other way around it. And in the tournament, assuming you maybe get, let's see, like top six seed, you would hope for, then I'd say you got to get a win as well. And depending on the game, you can't get blown out.
Matchups,
the NIT blown out against Oregon, they got blown out. You can't just get there and then get blown out.
Matchups
again
can suck though in the tournament.
Yeah, they can, but you can't be making excuses once you're there. It's a whole different season once you make it there. So,
well, and that's the real question, man. How do you handle pressure at this level? And that's a question Bill Moose has for Tim Miles.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very fair question with what he's been able to do. To his credit, he's brought in an incredible team. It's been a little different because of the transfer, and that's the niche, right? Because kids are leaving in droves. Is that sustainable? That's what Bill Moose wants to see. Spend some more time on hoops. We'll get into some football. Great to be with you on a Wednesday with Hail Varsity Radio.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Mike Schuhart on the way. We're going to run down Brad Edwards in an hour. Glenn Mason to talk Gophers and Huskers. Welcome in Derek Peterson. Dr. Petey HV is where you follow him on Twitter. Great feature in the Hail Varsity magazine on Frost and Oregon. A little Oregon Trail love there. And some talk about Nebraska, Minnesota. But Derek, let's get into basketball. You love it. You are a Thunder fan. That is impressive.
Yeah, did you use a GIF from the Thunder from their loss last night?
No, I didn't do that to him. I used an NBA Jam Boom Shakalaka GIF.
All right, I guess we'll give him a break.
We're gonna do that. He at least stayed up to watch that thing. Derek, what's good, man? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. Okay. Bill Moose's comments about Tim Miles yesterday. Not a mandate, but it'd be nice to come back and win 22 this year. What's your take? I mean, I think that's a fair expectation based on this team, assuming there's no injuries. That's a big assumption.
Yeah, somebody asked us this question in our mailbag actually just today, and I don't think it's anything alarming. I mean, I don't think it's anything to like freak out about. Like, oh my gosh, Bill Moose is getting ready to fire Tim Miles. I think it's just a boss reaffirming performance expectations. Because this is a season where Nebraska has as much talent as, oh God, we're doing the talent question. Nebraska has as much talent on the basketball court as anybody in the Big Ten. And they're a team that, if everything breaks right for them, I mean, this is a team that could contend for a regular season conference title and make some noise in the Big Ten tournament when it moves back to Chicago. Is it in Chicago this year or is it in Indianapolis?
I don't know. You guys will be there for it, I'm sure.
Wherever it's at. This is a team that has expectations, and rightfully so, because they're a talented bunch. So Moose's comments didn't strike me as anything other than just reaffirming that.
What was the vibe you got from the guys in Chicago last week?
A lot of excitement, but also a lot of you know, knowing that, you know, those expectations are out there, and knowing that they're going to have a target on their back, so to speak, in the coming games because they did have such a successful season last year. But there's also, you know, I got a sense that these guys are hungry. You know, I remember talking to James Palmer Jr. before last season ended, and there was a lot of disappointment over not getting into the tournament. So Nebraska, obviously, in scheduling, made sure that some of the issues that plagued them last year don't happen again. They beefed up the non-conference schedule a little bit. You know, I think the Big Ten as a whole will be a better conference this season, so that shouldn't hurt them again. So these guys are going to have to go out and they're going to have to earn it each night. There's the sense that I got is that they're hungry to do so.
Derek, I want you to fill in the blank here. If Nebraska doesn't do what, then what would you consider the season being a failure as? Me, I said if they don't make the tournament, then the season is a failure in my view. What is it for you?
yeah, if they don't make the tournament, it's definitely a failure.
Do you expect them? Do they need to win at least one game in there too, or will that be enough?
So that was going to be the other thing that I was about to say. You know, I expect them to be there. They're talented enough to be there. They should be there. It's a matter of, can you get that first tournament win? I wouldn't say that the season is a failure if they get knocked out in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I think getting there will be a success for this team. But I also think it's not going to be just enough to get there. I think there will be disappointment if they lose. It won't be a failure, but there will be disappointment if they lose a tournament game. Because I thought this was a team that last year, they could have won a tournament game. This season, I think they can absolutely win a tournament game. And so if they get there, the expectation will be, okay, win one. Win the first game ever for this program. Do it. Win it.
Derek Peterson's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Dr. PDHV on Twitter. It's where you follow him. Read him, HailVarsity.com and magazine. We'll get to football in a minute. What will Tim Miles be better at this year to help this team get there?
What will he be better at?
Yes.
I think he knows more of what this team is. You know, I asked him about this when he did availability a couple weeks ago. Like, what's the identity of this team going to be? Last season was a lot of experimentation. Last season was a lot of trying to figure out who you got, who works well, where, what kind of basketball you can play. And they know who they are heading into the season. They know who the core of the team is. And for the most part, they know who's going to provide what off the bench. They know roles. And Miles knows that this is a team that has a good defense. Miles knows that this is a team that can be really, really tough matchup-wise because of kind of they can play interchangeable basketball. They can play kind of positionless basketball. I think he will be better in terms of just getting them in situations where they can be successful because he knows where they can be successful.
Derek, let's switch gears. If folks haven't read it, give folks a bit of a tease with what you spent time on. Fabulous story on Coach Frost, Oregon Trail tribute, and Coach Frost and your work in the latest issue of Hail Varsity Magazine.
Yeah, shout out to our design guy, Quinton. I thought he did a fantastic job laying that out. As always, he's really good. We also had Jacob had a really good feature in there on Luke Gifford. Went and hung out with him for a game, watched Isaac Gifford play. I kind of just, you know, one of the things that I've been really curious about was obviously everybody knows what Scott pulled from Tom Osborne. You know, everybody knows about the relationship that Frost has with Dr. Tom and learning how to obviously manage a larger roster, learning how to connect with your players, learning how to teach young men, learning how to be a good man, not only a football coach, but a good man. I was curious where the Oregon stuff came from or what stuff from Oregon came with him. I was curious what he learned from Oregon, and so I really just wanted to answer that question. So talked to a couple people that were there when Frost was there at Oregon and were there when Chip was there at Oregon. There are a couple guys on staff right now that have been, you know, Greg Austin has been in the Chip Kelly coaching tree pretty much his entire coaching career. Eric Schnander, he had a funny line. He was coaching tight ends at Northern Iowa, and Chip called him up and wanted him to coach defense. And Shenander was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. And Chip talked him into it and said it was the best decision he's ever made. So a lot of what we're hearing from football practice, a lot of what we hear from availability, a lot of what the coaches are preaching, a lot of that came from Oregon. And I was a little surprised to see how much of it did because, you know, Scott has learned from so many great head coaches and been under so many great head coaches in his career. But there is a huge, huge Oregon Ducks, Chip Kelly influence happening right now in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right, and that's going to be blended with the Osborne physicality. You're waiting for it at 0-6 right now. Nebraska fans want to see a win. This team wants a win. The coaching staff wants a win. How do they get it Saturday?
Don't let the same things that bit you in the butt last Saturday against Northwestern happen again. I think they were really, really close. Obviously, you know, 10-point lead with 5 minutes to go. You hate to go through those things, Shenander kind of phrased it like, we don't want to have to deal with that, but because of the fact that we did deal with that, that will help us in the long term. Those are things that you absolutely learn from and you grow from. So, you know, the next time Nebraska's in a situation like that, like I feel like they know now better how to close things out. You know, I was looking through numbers like Bob Stoops in his first season at Oklahoma was 0-2 in one possession football games, and Nick Saban was like 1-4 or something like that in his first year at Alabama, 2-4 in one possession football games. Like you got a team has to learn how to close those close ones out, and I think you know that's a benefit that you can take from that Northwestern game. But I think Nebraska should be able to move the football pretty effectively. I think you know we've heard a ton about. You know, this Purdue is a turning point. This is an offense that's getting close. It's starting to click. You saw against Northwestern, the offense and the defense was clicking at the same time for portions of it. I think Nebraska should be able to move the ball against a Minnesota defense that's really pretty stout against the run, but mostly average in the back half of the defense. I think the key for Nebraska is going to be, can you build up a lead? Can you get one or two or three scoring possessions and string those together early on? You don't want to have happen what happened against Northwestern where you score first and you don't score again until the end of the half. If they can get like a 14-point lead, Minnesota's offense, led by a true freshman walk-on quarterback, has been up and down trying to find footing, trying to figure out what they do well. They've struggled consistency-wise, as has Nebraska. It's just the case when you have a young quarterback in a new system. If they can kind of jump out to an early lead and get some confidence, I think the home crowd will have an effect. I think going against an offense that is very much like themselves will benefit them, and I think the defense has a chance to have a real bounce-back game.
Derek Peterson with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine, at Dr. PDHV on Twitter. 7 interceptions the last 3 games for that true freshman quarterback. Just saying, see if Nebraska's secondary can keep up the interception streak. I'm glad to hear they're going to try out some different folks in man defense. Deontay's a guy, and Cam, another dude that they've been there. They played the ball well. They played the ball the best when it's been in the air. So anxious to see them. What's your take on PJ Fleck? I've been pretty impressed with what they did against Iowa and what they did against Ohio State. I don't know if Ohio State's disinterested or if Minnesota's just making those type of strides. What's your read on the Gophers?
I think Ohio State looks a little disinterested over the last couple of weeks, but I'm a PJ Fleck fan. I did not think that this season was going to look very good for Minnesota. I didn't like the quarterback situation they had, but he has, you know, they've done well for themselves. What is their record right now?
3-3. 0-3 in the Big Ten.
3-3. That's pretty good. Sitting 3-3. I thought this was a team that had a chance to finish below Illinois in the Big Ten West standings, just because I think that there's some serious holes on their roster. I like PJ Fleck. I think he can maximize what he has. I think he can get guys in good positions. You know, the 7 interceptions, as is Nebraska, they're playing a young quarterback that's just learning football. Mm-hmm. They're inconsistent, but I like kind of what PJ's doing. And they got a pretty good running back too, the freshman kid last week. I can't remember his name.
Ibrahim's incredible. Yeah,
yeah, he's good. 157 yards against Ohio State.
That'll work.
Good.
We'll see if Nebraska's run defense can be stout. Derek Peterson, Dr. PDHV on Twitter is where you follow him. Get that issue today. Read his Oregon story on Frost. And be sure to catch his work on HailVarsity.com. Derek, thanks for the time, brother.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
There he is. All right, Shuey's on the house.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. It is Mike Shuhart time, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Sun is shining, grass is green, snow is gone, fall golf, come on with it. Reminding about Wilderness Ridge, how about winter wines. I don't like saying that W word, the first W word, winter. But wine is good stuff. Good food, good wine, good friends, good times. Gather your friends and enjoy an evening of wine paired with five made-from-scratch courses presented by the restaurant chef Mike Perkins and executive sous chef George Lucian. And it's going to be Tuesday, November 27th at 6:30. That includes tax, reservations required, but have a winter wine party with Wilderness Ridge, November 27th. Get your reservations. It sounds like an incredible time for a Tuesday night or any night. 402-434-5118. You can call Shuey or Chris Thompson and get some lessons locked in. You can get out on the course for sure with this weather, because Old Man Winter got told to go to back where he came from, and it's beautiful out. Shuey, it is good to see you, brother.
Man, glad to be here.
How you been?
I've been good. Especially today.
Yeah. You got the old Wilderness Ridge Zip up going.
Oh yeah.
And you're out there just draining pots, brother.
What a difference a week makes.
Oh my gosh.
Last week was not nice.
I was a little hacked off. I mean, I was gonna go golf Sunday.
No golfing Sunday.
No football Sunday, no golfing Sunday. Man, nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there today, so
it is, man. And there's time to go swing the clubs, take a breather Friday morning, come see us at the Graduate Friday afternoon, roadshow for Wilderness, for Hail Varsity Radio, and go get your swing on. What is so awesome about Wilderness Ridge? You've been there for a long, long time, man. You've seen a lot of different seasons. Spring is yes, summer's awesome. But I love how picturesque it is. And quite frankly, it'll make you forget about a bad approach shot.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's just so unique. I mean, it's one of a kind here in Lincoln, in the Midwest. I mean, it's not anything that you typically go see. So it's unique. The golf course is beautiful. It's in great shape. Clubhouse is, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. The deck.
Yeah, the
lodge.
The
I mean,
views.
You get done playing 9 or 18, you're going to sit down, you're going to order something, you're going to pour something, and you're going to just sit out and look at beauty.
Yeah. It's a great golfing experience, but then it's a great experience before and after. You know, you can make a whole day of it, and wine and dine and golf and practice. And
well, tell me about the practice part, my man, because you've been doing that for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Folks can come see you anytime.
It's got a great practice facility. You know, it has probably the best range in town. Mm. You know, we have our golf academy, which is when the weather's not very nice, you can still get out and do some things. You know, so it's year round, which is nice. I mean, that keeps somebody swinging the clubs and being involved in something they love to do. So it's an opportunity to do that all the time. So,
what are some adjustments folks got to make when it hits this time of year, when we get to mid-October, and it is now fall golf? It's still green, and that green may fade a little bit. You're going to have a little bit of briskness. How does that affect someone's game?
Well, weather has a huge effect on it.
Right.
You know, because typically it gets cooler, you know, especially in the mornings. It's cool in the mornings. You know, if you're going to have a nice day, it'll warm up. But it's about learning to dress appropriately for it. You know, layering. Got to layer. Because as it gets warmer, you take one layer off, still have a layer. You know, keeping your hands basically warm, you know, because once you get cold, once your hands get cold, then you start losing a little feel. If you got too many clothes on, you got the wrong clothes on, it restricts your ability to swing. And you're going to lose a little bit, you know, depending on how cold it is out. You know, you just
can't. More flexibility.
Yeah, and you just can't compress the ball. Just the conditions won't let you compress it. So will you typically start hitting it maybe a little shorter? Possibly, you know, if the conditions aren't very good.
So I play fall golf all year round.
Yeah, man.
I'm saying hitting it shorter.
Oh, yeah, you got to get into the summer mode.
That's right. I'm still trying to get into that. Mike Shuhart's with us here, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, wildernessridgegolf.com. Shuey, you've coached at the college level for a long, long time, my man, and let's spend a little bit of time here. Because in golf, those expectations, it's you versus the course. Yes, you'll play for a course team. Yes, you'll play for a high school team or a club team, and you can go beyond. So there are expectations. Each golfer is set, and it's set up by the coaching or the instruction. But on a grander scale, and we're talking Bill Moose to start things off, you were at Nebraska for a number of years, and – just dealing with that as a coach and then getting that out of your team is something I'm interested in here. How do coaches at that level, the Division I level, the Big Ten level, process expectations? Competitors want to compete and thrive.
Sure.
But there's a juggling act that happens because not every year's the same, not every team's the same, and not every experience level with the players you have is the same.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like golf is a little unique, but not, because it's an individualistic game. Mm-hmm. You are playing on a team, but it's still you going out there challenging the golf course and challenge yourself against the golf course to do what you do. You know, and it's if you go do that well, you'll shoot a number. That number is what helps the team, and so on and so forth. So it's like, how do you get each player to get themselves in a position where they are maximizing what it is that they do? You know, and that's easier said than done. You know, because they have certain goals and expectations, and when they don't meet some of those goals and expectations, that breeds doubt. And so on and so forth, you know, leads us to make mistakes and this and that. So it's like, you know, personally, just teaching and getting players to understand, it's like you break it down into as small of an achievement as you can. So it's like, what are you really trying to achieve? You know, if your goal is to shoot 69, well, you have to break it down farther than that, basically the processing. What is the processing that takes place for you to actually produce that at the end of the day? You know, you can't go out there and try to shoot 69 because there's a process that takes place on each and every hole. Well, it's even less than that, is it's each and every shot that you have to process. You add all those processings up, and that's what gets you a final result. So it's like, how do you get them to stay into the process? And that to me is the hardest part, because it's too easy to bogey the first five holes, and it's like, well, if 69 is what I wanted to shoot, I'm not going to be able to do that. But that's irrelevant, because you still can do that. You know, I have a quick story about one of the players that I had on my team, and that's exactly what happened. And I caught her out there, and she was in a very difficult situation. I said, have you ever hit this shot before? Sure. You not hit this shot? Yeah. So I said, why don't you just hit this shot? So she was in a fairway bunker with a 6-iron, hit it out of the bunker on the green, and knocked it in the hole. And then she went and birdied the next four holes. So she was 5 over after 4, but then she went eagle, birdie. So after the next 4 holes, she was 1 under. So it's like, if you stay with the process, it can switch quickly. You know, as long as you believe that it can, or just stay with the process of hitting your shot, because
you got to deconstruct.
Yeah,
it is station to station.
It is.
More from Mike Shewhart. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Get that tee time for a gorgeous fall extravaganza. We'll wind down hour one with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Coming up, Brad Edwards is going to be with us. And then longtime coach at Minnesota, part of the Big Ten Network, Glenn Mason, coming up next hour. We spent a lot of time talking Nebraska basketball. Bill Moose's comments and expectation for Tim Miles. Moose spoke with the Journal Star and World Herald yesterday. Good stuff from Derek Peterson. And Chewy, you've been going to basketball games for a long time. You remember the knee era? You remember No Sit Sunday?
Oh, yeah.
You remember last year's team and run, and the only loss was that last-second dagger by KU?
Yeah.
I mean, man, you got to be fired up for hoops this year.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, they have some serious talent on that team, you know, so if they can play together and do what each one of them does and kind of mesh.
How do you juggle talent then? How do you extract that talent and then make it even grow further? And I'm talking just generally. I mean, I know we spend a lot of time on golf, but back to the college level discussion.
A lot of that's on the team. It's a lot of that is on the team and how they look at each other on the team and our acceptance of what their roles are and what they do. You know, each one of them should feel like they have a role, but also at any role they put them in, they can succeed in. But it's like, I look at this team, it's like, who's your scorer? Do you know that going in?
Four of them, or at least three.
But you know who your number one guy is, you know? And it's like each one fits into a piece of the puzzle. That doesn't mean Glenn can't go out and score 30.
Right, because he has.
Because he has, exactly. But he's not dependent on him to do that every night. I mean, you have a guy out there that's pretty consistent that can score a lot of different ways. Do they know that? Are they going to set him up to be able to do that? Sure. That opens up everybody else to be able to do their thing. You know, so it's becoming a, you just have to learn to be a non-selfish team, mm-hmm. you know, and play within the scheme of the things that you do and value each possession and maximize what you can, you know. It's so much of it is belief in what you do. Getting off to a good start will be huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll be different, though, because they are a hunted team now.
Man, they there's no surprises.
No. I mean, everybody knows they're loaded. Everybody knows who they are. I mean, all the coaches have seen them play last year, so they will game plan around them. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, can they?
It's just a nutty league, too, in the sense that there's really no off nights.
No.
Someone always rises up.
Exactly.
I mean, look how good Penn State was, Ohio State last year. Northwestern not long ago, Michigan's Michigan, Sparty's Sparty, Purdue's insane.
Yeah, but that's the exciting thing about it.
That's what's cool, though. You're playing at a high, high level.
Yeah.
Every conference game, Maryland is playing a team, a bubble, or an NIT. You're playing that level for the majority of your games.
Yeah. The cool part about it is the talent they have in their team. It's like you have enough talent that if one guy's off one night, you know, you have other guys that mm-hmm. that can raise their level to be competitive with anybody at any time. Mm-hmm. So that's the exciting part, is that you just have talent all over the floor that, you know, you don't have to have one guy or two guys be able to play perfect to win. It's like you can beat teams a lot of different ways.
Mm. Well, Illinois is going to be tough next year. They were good. Let's get qualified now for the Black Friday road trip.
Worse? How could they get any worse? We're at the threshold of hell!
Is this heaven? It's Iowa.
The jolliest bunch of fools this side of the nut house.
Hey, you know, America loves points.
Thank you, Bob Diaco. Caller 9 qualifies for Nebraska-Iowa Black Friday Roadie.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Glenn Mason to talk Gophers and Huskers coming up. Brad Chicago's Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt, Mike Schuhart sitting in. We welcome in Brad Edwards, College Football Insider. College Game Day with ESPN at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, it's like every week we get a new development in this playoff race. It was just a couple weeks ago everyone was talking about what if like 18 teams go undefeated, and we're whittling that number down now, and people are having to accept for the 50th year in a row that we're not going to have a whole bunch of undefeateds.
No, I know. You're going to have a loss, and you got the game looming with LSU and Bama in a couple of weeks. You've got Notre Dame that's won a handful of games by a combined 28 points. And you're going to have an insane atmosphere with Washington State, Oregon. But the Pac-12's been eliminated pretty much. And then there's the Big Ten. Can Ohio State get rolling without Bosa? I want to start with Nebraska, and I know they're 0-6. And, Brad, thank you kindly for talking Nebraska with us every week like you do. But you've seen a lot of college football, man. You've seen college football on site with game day. You've been to the games. And Northwestern Nebraska was an ABC 11 o'clocker, which was very, very good. And it was an incredible game for those who like purple, and it was a wonderful finish for college football fans, but not Nebraska fans. Have you ever seen anything like that? Have you seen a meltdown of that proportion before?
Oh, yeah. We see meltdowns every week. I'm guessing
Does that one stand out is my question.
No, no. I mean, Nebraska might not have had a meltdown like that, but yeah, there are all sorts of cases of. I mean, look, they're all unique.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to go back too far. Where I mean, you look back at what Oregon did.
Oh yeah.
I don't know, what was it, 4 weeks ago against Stanford when they were up 17 and first and goal at the one to go up 24. End up fumbling, it gets returned, you know, all the way for a touchdown and 10-point game, and then they end up, even after that, still had a chance to just run out the clock, and they failed. So, I mean, teams find a lot of, you know, creative ways to give away games, and Nebraska did it, and in a couple weeks it'll be someone else's turn. But look, I guess it's more frustrating when you're looking for that first win to kind of get on the board, and you think you have it, and it gets away. But I think overall you got to be really encouraged with the way that they came out and played in that spot, especially given all the stuff that had, you know, gone wrong up to that point. They're, you know, Scott Frost is making progress. That maybe there could be some guys on the roster who aren't buying in, but what it shows you is that the majority of guys are, and it's starting to make a difference.
That's where I was going to go. Nationally, the narrative's kind of been, you know, what's going on at Nebraska. Tom Rinaldi did a feature with Frost last week that aired on game day. You had USA Today come out with the buyout numbers for Frost, and that editor and digital guy got lit up on Twitter.
Yeah.
As a national guy, what's your read on this? Are you panicking for Nebraska, or are you just like, look, man, look at Chip Kelly, look at Florida State, look at
right
all of these air quote blue bloods? They're struggling. It is what it is in 2018. How do you process it?
Yeah, look, that's the way I see it, which is that you have, I mean, look, Nebraska clearly has more talent than a winless team. Like, I mean, they should be better than that record-wise based on the players they have. But I also recognize that there's a lot of change going on, and he's not necessarily running offensive and defensive schemes that play to the strengths of the majority of guys who are on his roster. And because of that, you're not necessarily going to, at least this year, play up to your potential. And so it's really, at this point, is more about learning to do the little things. And it's about the long term. And so I understand that. And I actually came away from that interview with Rinaldi very impressed. In fact, I made the comment that if I were a high school kid watching that or listening to Scott Frost, you know, talk to me in that same way and wanting me to come to Nebraska, I'd say, where do I sign? I was just very impressed with his outlook on everything and, you know, his honesty about it. And it reached me. I don't know if it reaches today's kids or not, but I do think that he is the right guy for the job, and I'm not worried at all about where Nebraska is going to be 2 or 3 years from now.
Brad Edwards with us talking college football, ESPN College Game Day, ESPN Insider, and here on ESPN Radio with Game Day. Brad, what's your take on P.J. Fleck? I mean, I listen to his press conference. I hear the sound bites. Sometimes he wears people out. I think he's pretty pointed. I mean, he's a pretty intense listen, but I don't mind listening to him. And I think his team's playing pretty well. I've said this to everyone we've talked to, that they are ahead of schedule, and they've wowed me. I know they started out to get some confidence 3-0. I know they've dropped their last three. Maryland's a good club. Iowa's really good, and they played Ohio State well. Are you thinking that Minnesota could build up to be pretty decent here the next few years in the West?
Yeah, look, there's no reason they can't. I mean, one of the comments that I've made the last few weeks when we've talked about, you know, all the new coaches who are struggling and who are you most worried about, one of the reasons I've said that I'm not worried about Frost is that he's in a division where there are no teams that recruit at a really high level. And I think if you want to be optimistic about Minnesota, you kind of take that same approach, which is that it's not like Wisconsin and Iowa are bringing in the type of players that you can't possibly compete with. I mean, if you're in the Big Ten East, then maybe it's a different outlook. But I think that, you know, as long as your guys are well coached, you've got a good chance to you know, to have success in the Big Ten West. And you're starting to see those signs right now. I mean, I understand why he, you know, kind of wears on people, as you said. But I think for the most part, college kids buy into that. I don't think it would fly in the pros. But all that rah-rah stuff, especially kids who were not, you know, five-star recruits, guys who have a chip on their shoulder and are very well aware that a whole lot of people don't believe in them. That works with them, and so I don't think there's any reason to think that he's not going to have some success there. Certainly, at least at the level of success that Minnesota has had in its best years in the last couple decades. So I'm optimistic about what he can do there. And last week, I mean, you mentioned the Ohio State game, man, that was an eye opener for me. I mean, yeah. The Buckeyes have struggled defensively all season, giving up big plays, and Minnesota had a few more, and that one didn't surprise me. What did was how much time Minnesota's defense spent in the Ohio State backfield. I mean, the Buckeyes could not get the running game going, and when Haskins wasn't completing passes, he was getting hit. And so now you could look at it as either a very encouraging sign for Minnesota or a very concerning thing for the Buckeyes moving forward. But that was pretty evident to me watching that game, is that Minnesota physically held their own a lot better than I was expecting them to.
Brad, sticking with the Big Ten, how about that Michigan State-Penn State game? I mean, it seems like both teams are just all over the place this season. Michigan State getting upset a couple weeks ago. Now they're the ones upsetting Penn State. Can you get a read on any of these teams thus far this season?
Well, I will agree with James Franklin that his team is not elite. I agreed with him after the Ohio State game when he said it, and I think that's been reinforced. I don't remember if I said it on your show last week, but I know of a few shows that I did where the Michigan State-Penn State game came up. I said, look, I have sold all my stock on Michigan State as a playoff contender, but I am not for one second writing off the possibility that they're going to, you know, pull an upset that's going to shape the conference race. You know, I felt that there was almost no chance that they weren't going to play up to that potential and beat either Penn State, Michigan, or Ohio State. Now that they've knocked off one of them, the question is, do they have another one in them? And, look, Michigan State is out of the conference race, and they still have one loss, which is, if they just take care of their own business, they're gonna be there. There's plenty of motivation for them, just as Michigan is in a
Brad Edwards with us, Hale Varsity Radio.
Yeah.
Brad, do we still got you, bud? It sounded like you're getting electrocuted. No! Oh, man! He's driving by the worst cell phone spot in America by Bristol. Happens once a month to us. God love him for coming on. And he did say Sparty's got an upset or more in them. So we'll get Brad Edwards back on. Glenn Mason is coming up in 10 minutes. I love talking to Glenn Mason, man. He was 38 years old when he took the Kansas job. Had them in the top 10 twice. And then did awesome things at Minnesota. Wasn't good enough for the Minnesota AD at the time. And Minnesota went back to awful football until they found Jerry Kill. Brad, we lost you, brother. It sounded like you were getting zapped. Are you doing okay?
Yeah. I am. I'm still in full health, and we can continue the conversation.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, I was just saying that with both teams still very much alive in the conference race, a lot of people are going to want to make this game out to be just about, you know, can Jim Harbaugh finally break through and this bad record he has against their rivals. And it's a lot. It's about a lot more than that, because they both have a whole bunch on the line, and I give Sparty a great chance in this game, especially when you look at the way that Michigan offensively has struggled on the road compared to the way that they've played at home. Michigan fans are, trust me, I know a bunch of them at work, and they are. They're very nervous about this game.
Yeah, and yeah, you said on our show that Sparty does have an upset in him, and man, it came through last Saturday. When you look at this weekend and some of the games, you have Iowa against Maryland. Iowa's really playing good ball. They're explosive offensively. I don't know, man. I think Brohm's such a good coach, and Blau's playing well, and I know Purdue's 3-3, but are the Buckeyes on upset alert? The way they haven't played well since Penn State.
Right. Well, I think you could argue about how well they played at Penn State. I think they were very fortunate that some short pass completions turned into touchdowns because of exceptional individual plays on the part of the receivers. But I thought it was Haskins' worst game of the year as far as just the way that he looked, his comfort level, and his ability to hit passes downfield. Purdue is obviously not going to be the biggest test Ohio State will have athletically, but I tell you what, it's well documented the struggles they've had giving up big plays defensively, and Purdue is actually the team that leads the Big Ten in big plays on offense, and I'm categorizing that as plays of 25 yards or more. I've done some stuff on this week, which is that it's not the Buckeyes, it's not Michigan, it's not Penn State, it's Purdue that is the Big Ten's best big play offense at this moment, and that's got to be scary for Ohio State. And so I'm with you. I think this is a legitimate upset alert game, and it's one where I would expect there to be a lot of points scored. I mean, Ohio State's going to get what it gets through the passing game, and Purdue's not going to be able to shut them down. But this is one where if the Buckeyes are a little sloppy and they turn the ball over a few times, that they could be in for a long night. And so I'm not writing this one off. But you mentioned Iowa. I mean, I'm starting to hear a lot of these people, suggesting Iowa as the potential Big Ten West champion, given how Wisconsin looked. And don't write Purdue off. If Purdue were to pull the upset over the Buckeyes, then they're in the thick of that thing too.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, about 90 seconds here. A thought on NC State Clemson. Is NC State for real? And what's it going to be like in Mike Leach land with Oregon Game Day in Washington State?
Well, I'm just hoping that Game Day has a lot of Mike Leach sound bites. I really don't care what he's talking about. In fact, it's better if he's not talking about football. It's just highly entertaining to listen to him talk about whatever topic you present. So
we had him on last.
We get a lot of that.
We had him on last week. We keep in touch with the Pirate, and he talked about Charlie horses in Sunday school. It was beautiful.
So yeah, hopefully the national audience will be treated to some of that, and then look it's a big game in the Pac-12 North.
Yep.
I know a lot of us have written off that conference playoff-wise, but it's still a big game, and good for them for finally getting Game Day to come there. On the ACC front, this is the biggest thing from this game, and I'm not sure if I buy into NC State. They had that West Virginia game canceled.
Yeah.
They really haven't played anybody all that good in order to be undefeated right now. But they have taken Clemson to the wire 2 years in a row, and so there's something about them that matches up well with Clemson. It may have been all those defensive linemen they lost after last year. We'll find out. But if NC State wins this game, they have a great chance to win that division because their schedule is not all that tough the rest of the way, and they would have to lose twice to not win the Atlantic. And so the biggest thing is, if they win this game, Clemson might not be the ACC champion, and the question then becomes, how does that affect their chance of getting into the playoffs?
Could affect it. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider. Brad, a lot of fun, man. We love catching up with you. We'll check in next week. Thanks for the time today.
All right, thank you, guys. Always enjoy it.
Take care. Brad Edwards. Game day is going to be nuts. That's going to be awesome for the Pirate. Glenn Mason, we'll talk Gophers with him next. Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, a coach that Nebraska fans know well. Great to have back on the show, Glenn Mason, longtime coach at Kansas and with the Minnesota Golden Gophers, part of the Big Ten Network. Coach Mason, thanks for the time. How are you?
Well, I'm great. It's amazing you say longtime coach at Kansas. Every week, it seems like I run into somebody. I was just flying back from Chicago last night, and a gentleman, retired guy, lives now at Scottsdale, but a big Nebraska fan stopped me, and he says, "Coach, we just loved when you were at Kansas." I said, "Sure you love me. You beat me every year I was there. Why wouldn't you love me?"
Let's give yourself some credit. You had some incredible teams at Kansas in 1993 I'm still sweating about.
Well, it's you know, everybody says that we didn't have overtime back then, and I scored with 52 seconds left to go in the game, and needless to say that Nebraska had a chance for, you know, on a run for a national championship, and I had to make a decision. Do I go for two and win, or do I kick it and tie and see if we could hold on? And I went for two, but it didn't work.
Well, you made the right call. Nebraska fans applaud anyone that'll go for two. I tell you that. They respect it. And, Coach, I wanted to ask you about the two programs you took over that I think resonate with a lot of folks. That what you did at Kansas, that what you did at Minnesota, took the Gophers to heights they really hadn't seen. When it came to putting your plan in place and going to work, how did you go about it? How did you want to build a program? And I ask that because Coach Frost is doing his thing here in Lincoln, and Nebraska's in the midst of it now.
But, you know, that's a great question. And, you know, it's you know, typically when you make coaching changes, it's because the program isn't in very good shape, with the exception when coaches leave for bigger and better things. And so when you go in as a new coach and you're one of those that you go in, the change was made because things weren't going well. If you think it's going to happen just overnight, it's not. There's a lot of things that you got to change. I don't think there's one common denominator that you can compare to all programs, but there's a lot of things that you have to change. And, you know, you start at square one, and you, one thing you need to do, you can't be a knee-jerk reaction guy. You got to have a belief. You got to have a plan, and you put it in place, and you just keep going away, keep chopping away at it. And just because you have some setbacks, you don't change it. And as long as you hang in there long enough, the people have enough faith in you, and you know what you're doing, normally you turn it around.
Glenn Mason's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, part of the Big Ten Network. You see him do analyst work in studio. You hear him on games with the Big Eight in Kansas and, of course, Minnesota in the Big Ten. What were you expecting when you made the transition to the Big Ten? And what was the league like as you got comfortable and did a decade plus there? What sticks out about the Big Ten when you were in it? What impressions do you have about the league as a whole now?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, first of all, I thought that the old Big Eight was a great football conference, you know, second to none. And, you know, back in those days, you think about how good Nebraska was, how good Oklahoma was. Oklahoma State had the best team money could buy. Colorado was on their way to – I mean that seriously. Come on now. And Colorado was on their way, you know, to a national championship with Bill McCartney. It was just an absolutely great football conference. And then I ventured to Minnesota, and I had been a Big Ten guy. I played at Ohio State. I coached at Ohio State. I coached at the University of Illinois, and a large part of my assistant coaching background, I recruited that part of the Midwest. And it was another great, you know, football conference. The big difference, probably the stadiums were a little bit bigger the week in and week out than the Big Eight was. But as we go forward, you know, there for a number of years, the Big Ten was down, not much respect. And I think mainly that was because every conference has their marquee teams, and the marquee teams in the Big Ten arguably would be Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and the University of Nebraska. And there for a while, you know, Ohio State was the only one upholding their end of the bargain. Nebraska wasn't Nebraska. Michigan had taken a turn for the worse. Penn State had all kinds of problems they had to deal with. But it's coming back. You know, you look at it, Ohio State, usually they haven't missed a beat. Penn State's pretty good. Harbaugh's got Michigan running. And I think with due time, Scott Frost will have Nebraska back being Nebraska.
Glenn Mason's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What sticks out to you about P.J. Fleck at Minnesota? I thought Coach Kill did a great job. I thought his staff was tremendous. They were big and tough and physical, and they developed extraordinarily well. And Jerry's no longer there, and Fleck is there now. And I think he's playing so many freshmen. I've been pretty wowed with what they've done the last 2 weeks. They were right there with Iowa. They were really good against Ohio State, specifically the rush defense and their rushing attack. What have you seen from Fleck that impresses you?
Well, first of all, he does a lot of talking, I can tell you that. I don't mean that as a negative. That's his style. He's out front. He's always talking. You ask him what time it is, he's going to tell you how the watch was made. But he's done a good job. He's playing a lot of young players. You know, I don't know why the trend is, but it seems like every team I cover anymore in the Big Ten seems like they're playing a lot of young players. Maybe not as many as Minnesota is, But he's got a plan. He's starting a true freshman quarterback, which we all know is tough to do. He's really done a good job because he's lost some of his best players. He lost both top running backs in Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith, and then Antoine Winfield Jr. was his best defensive player, and he lost to him injury. And he's got the kids believing. They're playing hard. They've lost a couple games in a row, but they've been tight, as you mentioned, and I'm sure that he's looking forward to getting on the plane and going out to Lincoln, Nebraska, and playing the Cornhuskers, who haven't won a game yet. And when you're coaching, when you're playing a team that hasn't won a game yet, that scares the heck out of you.
Coach, a thought here on what is Minnesota's identity going to be? Are they going to be a line of scrimmage team? Are they going to be a pressure team on defense? I have not seen much of them. What do your eyes tell you about their strengths this year?
Well, they're going to try to run the football, and I can tell you that, you know, they're down to the third and fourth team running back, but Ibrahim,
yeah,
who's in there right now, is really doing a good job. He's a tough runner. Their offensive line is getting better, so, you know, they're going to try to run the football. As we all know, a running game is a quarterback's best friend, and, you know, if you're a freshman quarterback, you better have a best friend. I think on offense they've got as good a receiver core. They've got about four guys that are really playing well. Tyler Johnson is a wide receiver. They like to throw a lot of slant routes, and he can really do something once he gets his hands on the ball. A freshman Rashad Bateman is another guy in that mold. Chris Altman Bell is another guy that's, you know, has played some and has caught my eye, and then Demetrius Douglas is a kid that played last year, then got injured. He's back. But as a core, those four guys, they can cause some problems. And on defense, they're very aggressive. They do a really good job of pressuring the passer. They've got one defensive end. He's an undersized defensive end that used to be a linebacker, Carter Coughlin. He had a couple sacks and a fumble forced last week. I think he's leading the Big Ten in sacks right now. Blake Cashman, a linebacker that came here to Minnesota as a walk-on. Some guys make plays and some guys don't make plays. That guy makes a lot of plays. So they got a really good field goal kicker. And, you know, by and large, you know, are they a great football team? No. But they're a good, hard-playing football team that if they don't make mistakes, the other team makes mistakes, they can beat anybody.
Well, you mentioned mistakes, and Nebraska leads the nation in penalties. So many on offense, so many on defense. They're trying to get that cleaned up. Nebraska's lost a lot of games the last few years. They've lost 10 consecutively dating back to last year, but I don't know that I've seen a game like last weekend in Evanston with being up by 10 with 5 minutes left and it just falling apart for Nebraska. What's Coach Frost going through right now, Coach Mason, and what do you think Nebraska can become under Frost?
Well, first of all, they're up by 10 with 2:27 left to go in the game. I think that's right. And,
yep.
You know, the one thing about it, you don't want to play Northwestern in overtime. Pat Fitzgerald has won five straight overtime games. It's unbelievable. But I can only imagine, I can empathize with Coach Frost, what he's going through. If it wasn't his alma mater, if it wasn't the University of Nebraska, he'd probably be thinking to himself, why did I leave Central Florida in the first place? Because those guys are still rolling. But I'm sure that it's being a little bit more difficult or a lot more difficult, you know, than he thought. You know, I've watched his press conferences. I like his demeanor. He's not panicking. His confidence isn't shook. He thinks he'll get turned around, and he knows that, you know, the old adage that you got to avoid losing before you can win is so true. And the worst enemy Nebraska has to date has been Nebraska because they've self-destructed.
That they have. What impresses you about this Nebraska team, and what's a couple of factors that helped them get it done Saturday, if that happens?
Well, you know, from the time that I saw J.D. Spielman, I had a game, I think the first game that he played, and, you know, he caught my eye. And, you know, I knew the family, obviously, his dad, Rick mm-hmm. Spielman's the general manager of the Vikings, and I recruited his uncle, Chris Spielman, to Ohio State. His dad, Sonny, would be his grandfather. Sonny Spielman was a coach at Ohio that I knew, you know, very, very well. But I think, you know, he's really a good player. I'm anxious to see the Cornhuskers play, because I hear nothing but good things about Martinez, you know, the quarterback. You know, it's every time I watch the Cornhuskers play, I think back to the 90s when they were so, so good. No one ran the football better than they did. Nobody played better defense than they did. I know a lot of younger Cornhusker fans get mad at me when I have made statements about the Blackshirt defense, when they referred to Blackshirts now. They don't even resemble the Blackshirts that I remember back in the 90s. So it's not a criticism. I say that, you know, with great respect. But I just have a feeling that when you look at Nebraska right now, they're probably the best 0-6 team in the country. They're a lot better than that. I look at it because very unfortunate for a first-year coach's opening game gets canceled because of weather. All coaches talk about your team makes the most improvement between week one and week two. He plays a very good Colorado team in week two, and he loses a close game. I have a feeling if he had a game under his belt, they would have won that game. I think they play Troy next, and if they would have been 2-0, they'd probably beat Troy. And then even as last week, you talk about the Northwestern game. That's hard to explain. Most people, including Scott Frost, would say, we should have won that game. You talk about winning the opener, beating Colorado, beating Troy, beating Northwestern. We're not even having this conversation right now.
Glenn Mason, Big Ten Network, longtime coach at Kansas and Minnesota. Coach, great to spend a few minutes with you again. Thanks for the time today.
Well, I always love visiting Nebraska, talking to guys from Nebraska, and I am ecstatic that I'll be going to Lincoln next weekend to watch the Cornhuskers play Bethune-Cookman.
That'll be great to have you in, Coach. Best to you, and thanks for the time. Glenn Mason, man. Some shots there. Glenn's awesome. Best team money could buy, Oklahoma State. And P.J. Fleck. You'll hear that on the ESPN Lincoln Twitter handle at Hail Varsity. Coach very candid about his thoughts on P.J. Fleck. A Jock Talk's on the way with Hail Varsity.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Talk Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing all right, man. Football season in full swing, college football and the NFL. And you know what? You got a first family of football with the Boses. You got Joey and Santiago. I know he's had a foot issue. And now you have Nick Bosa yesterday deciding to step away from Ohio State with draw from school and get ready to train for the NFL. He's a projected top five pick. He's been a machine since he's been a true freshman, a junior now, and he has had core injury issues. Did that against TCU. Kind of break down what Bosa's been going through and what prompted him to decide to maybe move forward from Ohio State.
Sure, you know, it's a bit of a confusing area. They're trying to change some of the terminology of this just to help, you know, patients and athletes understand this better. Originally, how this all started, these, you know, kind of core injuries that they describe, they used to call it a sports hernia. That's still kind of used pretty widely. But it's kind of a misnomer because it's not truly a hernia in the sense. When you think of a hernia, you think about, you know, bowels kind of coming through the abdominal wall, having a little herniation through, you know, a hole in the fascia in the abdomen. And that's not what this is. Basically, a sports hernia or a core muscle injury, as they're describing, is if you think about along your belly or your abdomen, there's two muscles that kind of run alongside the belly button. They're called the rectus abdominis muscles. Those muscles come all the way down and they actually hook onto the pelvis, and the part of the pelvis they hook onto is kind of on top of the rami. It's called the superior rami. It's kind of a ring structure, and they hook on into that area. And so what happens is with a sports hernia or these core muscle injuries is when the muscle comes down past the belly button, it starts to form a tendon. Tendon is what basically takes and attaches a muscle to the bone. So you form the tendon at the bottom of the muscle, and then that tendon attaches onto to the bone. And so in an injury like a sports hernia or these core muscle injuries, what happens is a portion of that tendon or all of it can basically peel itself off of the bone or pull itself off of the bone. And that's essentially what a sports hernia is. There's different levels or grades of that. You know, there's just a sprain where you have just a little stretch to it. There's a higher grade tear where you can tear anywhere from, you know, partial all the way to a full tear. and that's how they describe them. And of course, kind of based on the grade of that, really kind of determines what treatment they will do. So when you're talking about this BOSA gentleman, as they describe it, of course, we're getting this through news reports and not, you know, through medical reports. He has had these core muscle injuries or sports injuries on both sides, which is pretty significant and likely indicates he's probably had these issues for quite some time.
So he's played with this injury. The discomfort is, on a scale of 1 to 10, is what with 1? If you're playing with both, how are you still going?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, pretty amazing. Obviously, it was probably kind of a lower grade. And most of the time with these athletes, they don't present as kind of that one, oh, I remember, you know, on this day I was doing this, I had this tear, and ever since I can't do anything. Usually it kind of starts as this kind of chronic groin pain. And a lot of our kind of heavy lifting athletes or athletes who are doing a lot of low type lifting stuff. So if you start going below like 90 degrees, these really kind of deep squatting type exercises, those patients really are kind of a higher risk of having these injuries. It's interesting, there was kind of a big Vogue thing to move into these kind of really deeper squats, deeper lifts, where you really kind of squat really low. That was kind of a Vogue thing to do several years ago that really took off. And then unfortunately, when that happened, you started to see this huge spike in these sports hernia injuries. Unfortunately, most of those places have learned their lesson from doing those. Some of the programs have not learned their lesson from that, and those folks tend to continue to have, you know, high rates of these kind of sports hernias or groin injuries. But that's really where it comes from. It's usually more of kind of a chronic event, chronically painful. It kind of gets worse over time. You kind of keep stretching it out until you finally reach a point where it does become very difficult to play. You don't quite have the strength. You have a hard time, you know, doing the weight lifting that you need to keep building, and that kind of leads you down kind of a different treatment pathway.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Nick Bosa's injury. So let's talk about his prognosis. You have the procedure done for both of his, we'll call them sports hernias, even though it's not sports hernia. You laid out what area in that core injury section that is affected. Let's move forward here. From a procedural standpoint, how do you fix this? What's your best estimate on fixing it? And let's talk long term. Is he a guy that's going to have frequent and constant issues with this, or is this one of those procedures that once it's done, it's going to stay healed for an extended period of time? Best to your knowledge, anyway. Nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah, sure. No, great questions. Now, you know, the past several years has become more popular in terms of fixing this. There's a gentleman out of Pittsburgh that kind of pioneered a lot of the stuff for the athletes in terms of fixing it. There's several different techniques and the ways that you can do this, but essentially the gist is you want to be able to go in and bring that tendon back down to its attachment point along the rami and essentially repairing the tendon back to it. Sometimes you'll have athletes that, you know, kind of have this chronic pain in the area. We think the tendon's been stretched. It gets in this chronic inflammatory state. It doesn't totally heal, and so the tendon tissue is kind of diseased in that area. And in those patients, if they, you know, continue to have problems, they fail PT, and they need surgery, basically you go in and kind of clean up the end of that tendon, get it back to healthier tissue, and then reattach it to the bone. But that's essentially the process. So with surgery, it's kind of some type of reattachment procedure to the bone. There's a variety of techniques to do that. I don't think the literature I don't think has quite shown which of those is more successful at this point, but that's what they do. It's not a long procedure. You know, typically something I probably could do within, you know, a half hour to an hour. And then the recovery time is interesting on these. So you're thinking about, you know, repairing a fairly sizable tendon group. They're pretty aggressive with their return to play. Some return to play programs are as early as anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. 6 is kind of the magic number. You start working on both sides, and you may look at more like 3 to 4 months. Those are probably a bit aggressive. When you look at these tears, you asked about, you know, what's the longevity of this? Is it a one-and-done type deal? Not typically. You know, I think there's a higher re-tear rate in these versus other kind of orthopedic or sports medicine type procedures. You think about the amount of force that goes through the area. So I do think there's probably a higher rate of failure of these. And so having a really aggressive protocol is probably not the right answer. They're still working on that. Again, the literature probably hasn't shown yet what's going to be the appropriate rehab strategy. So that's still kind of something that's evolving in terms of how long do you need to treat these. But ultimately, you know, where do these people end up? Most of these patients get back and do well. I will tell you that they still kind of have some groin pain. I don't think you completely eliminate the groin pain for them. You know, again, they're still kind of at a risk of having another re-injury. It is kind of something they always kind of battle. But you still can get back and be a, you know, successful athlete. But there is definitely a part of this that becomes kind of managing some symptoms even after the surgery. Just in my experience of seeing these patients, I don't do the surgery myself. There's a few specialists that do this that are outside of the orthopedic realm. It's usually general surgery people that do this procedure. I'm typically involved with, I see the athletes making the diagnosis and then referring them on for the surgical piece if they fail a rehab program.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Nick Bosa and laying out what is in front of him and what he's gone through at Ohio State as he heads off to his next phase, the NFL. Dr. Brandon, we'll get caught up again. Thanks for the info today.
You bet, Chris. You guys take care.
Your chance to get qualified for Nebraska-Minnesota tickets. Listen for that cue to call. As we're winding down a Wednesday, busy show tomorrow. Lots of fun today. Big thanks to Dr. Brandon there on the Bosa info and injury. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time on a Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, reminding you about the laws of physics. When you're in a vehicle, it's time to buckle up. Whether it's the passenger seat, the back seat, or the driver's seat, they stop your forward motion. Physics, we're talking about what stops you when there's an accident, when there's a crash. Two things, either the seat belt or the windshield. And seat belts prevent excessive injury. When your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry, click it or tick it, buckle up. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Okay, so we are loaded up. Thanks so much. You can log on, hailvarsity.com, or get to iTunes. Subscribe. It don't cost nothing for the podcast. Great stuff from Derek Peterson, Mike Shuhart, Brad Edwards, Glenn Mason. Incredible. And excited tomorrow. Brandon Vogel going to join us. Gary Barnett tomorrow. How about Cade Warner, Nebraska wide receiver? Get his take on the season, his take on Northwestern, his take on them Gophers and what it was like to grow up and play for and be coached by Papa Bear, the Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner. So that's cool. Can't wait to run that for you. Danny, you seem interested. You've been busy all day, brother. Are you just laying money down now that the NBA's tipped off, or what's going on with you?
Well, I gave a little fist pump right before you went on because I had the first...
Well, because it was like we had 5 minutes left and you get the hell out of here.
Well, no, the Dodgers and Brewers are playing, and I had the first 5 innings under 3.5 runs, and they tied it up. The Dodgers did 1-1, and they had a man on second, but they struck him out, so easy money.
Yeah,
not easy. Pretty stressful, but yeah. Also need the under 7 for the whole game. So 1-1 heading into the 6th, looking pretty decent.
Yeah, I'm good for you. And I know it's postseason. I know it's baseball. I know you and Pete Rose both think this thing's just cake. I don't know.
Kershaw
wears me out in the postseason. He's like Greg Maddux. They are insanely good the regular season, mm-hmm. but when postseason comes around...
He's doing all right today. Let's see if he can get it done. Same with David Price. He's been choking, too.
Yeah.
He's like made a mockery even by the Red Sox fans.
No, he's...
Him and everything.
Yeah, Red Sox fans been getting after it for the last 24 hours.
Did you see the tweet? David Price was like raking up in the bullpen. They're like, doing his job perfectly or exactly where he's supposed to be, something like that.
That's funny. getting raked. It's pretty good. Yeah, let's get qualified here. Nebraska-Minnesota tickets. We will get folks qualified tomorrow. We will do the giveaway at 5:25 tomorrow for Nebraska-Minnesota tickets. Also, 2 Blur party passes to get the tailgate going right on Saturday. Let's do it.
D
Dear Lord, in the battles go through life, we ask for a chance that's fair. A chance to get all the stripes. A chance to do or dare. If we should win, let it be by the code. Our faith and honor held high. If we should lose, stand by the road. Cheers, when winners go by.
To get an opportunity to come back here is special to me. Words can't describe how much it means to me to be back here in a place that I love, a place that I understand, a place that I want to represent.